This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 131. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchfishing.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchfishing.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Berners, it's all go in the world of cricket. Even though the English cricket season has finished, we've still got plenty to talk about on the show. Not least the forthcoming rematch, India versus England, and there's some interesting parallels with the club game there, I think. How do you manage to play against an opposition when you know that you've been comprehensively beaten by them, you know, not that long ago?
Yeah, it's quite good, isn't it? I don't know if that often happens when a side plays away and then they suddenly play a home series against exactly the same side. I don't know how that works out, but yeah, England look like they've picked a full strength side. We've got another one of our famous cold pack additions, Mr. Meeker from Surrey, who bowls 90 mile an hour rockets. So yeah. He could be the new Kevin Peterson on a bowling side, we hope.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different debate there, isn't it? How many South Africans can you fit into the England team? But yeah, I'm interested in how India are going to approach this, because do they think to themselves, you know, that was a tour which was a glitch, or is it a sign of something which is, you know, a more deep seated problem? You know, how do you go from world champions to someone who gets comprehensively stuffed by an England team who look rubbish in the World Cup? So you know, how does that even work? You know, is that just the vagaries of form, or is there something else at work there?
I think they'll be very glad that it's not a test series, put it that way, because at least the one day, as you know, there's a little bit more kind of open debate that it's a, you know, it's a who shows up kind of scenario, as we saw in England. It's, you know, a 50 over ding dong, and sometimes the fruit doesn't always come to the front. It's one of those ones where it can go either way with some early exchanges. So I think the playing field is evened out a little bit with the fact it's a one day series.
Yeah, absolutely. And just thinking back, you know, thinking back to the club game, if you play an opposition a couple of times in a season, you know, and they beat you the first time around, I wonder if that affects you when you go into the next game. I know my club have got a distinct bogey team, and some of the senior players, including one guy who's played in the first team for 10 years, has never played in a winning side against them. Which is an amazing. I mean, obviously, we're not always in the same division, but you know, of I don't know how many seasons we've played against them. Let's say 5 seasons we played against them. That's 10 games. He's never won a game. He's always been on the losing side.
I would stop playing. I think it would be interesting as well. England have picked. They've picked Borthwick, who's a young leg spinner from Durham, and it's quite rare that England have a leg spinner in their. In their camp.
England seem to have spinners queuing up to get into the team. You know, you've got Adil Rashid, haven't you? And you've got, you know, Monty Panesar still hanging around. And it seems to be on the edge of a golden age of spin for England. So how does that happen? That's an interesting thing. I know the ECB have put a lot of money into developing spinners and have had these special spin development funds available. So I suppose that's what's coming to fruition now. So, you know, does that mean that if you throw money at a problem, you can fix it?
Well, yeah, often that could be deemed the case in the IPL. They spend all this money, they try to get the best fixed solution, which is, you know, your big brand name players. It happens a lot in the English Premier League as well. There was a classic case scenario last night in the European game with Manchester City, where one of their big stars, Carlos Tevez, refused to warm up, then refused to actually play in the game, which is absolutely ludicrous. How can you, you know, you're paid all this money every week. How can you then openly refuse to actually play when they've got 4,000 or 5,000 travelling fans that have come from Manchester to Germany, and you say you don't want to play? I mean, I don't think it's quite reached that extreme in cricket yet, but certainly in the IPL, a lot of the players are paid the big bucks and they're expected to perform and produce the goods, and you know, quite often it fails to materialise. I mean, there are stories in the IPL where guys have been paid $500,000 and never even played a game. So you've got to wonder sometimes, haven't you, what you know, the administrators behind these teams, you know, what their thinking is and exactly what it's worth to be paying all this money for the players.
Yeah, I think with the IPL, I mean, half of it is not just to do with the results on the pitch, which is obviously important. But the other half is that, you know, the IPL is entertainment as much as it is cricket. But I think there's a parallel with club cricket as well, in that you can't necessarily buy success. I mean, we're going to be talking later on in the show to Chris Peplow of Ealing Cricket Club, who an enormously successful club team, and they're not based on buying success at all, even though Ealing is a, you know, in club terms, a relatively rich club.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you, like you say, you can't buy success. You have to bring that team together. You have to have that transparency through the team where everyone knows their role and knows about each other's game. And often if you've got one guy that's maybe paid or seeing things through a different set of shades, then suddenly you've got a little glitch in there and you've got a mountain to climb in terms of how he reacts and performs with the other blokes. So, yeah, it's really important. I mean, talking about that, there's also another interesting story where you could play with your brother. Of course, Mitchell Marsh and Sean Marsh have both been named in the in the Australian side, much like quite a few famous brothers who have played international cricket. But I'd imagine that's a very strong connection when you know your brother's on your brother and your best mate stood on the field with you as well. It's almost literally a 2-for-1 for the coach, I'd imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the Aussies are struggling at the moment. They're on the way back, perhaps. But they've got a new interim coach who's Troy Cooley, which is an interesting appointment. I know it's just for the time being, but he seems to have made his way to the top of the Australian tree by default at the moment.
Yeah, he was with England for a bit as the fast bowling coach, and that's what he was primarily known for, was his fast bowling and his biomechanical knowledge. But he's worked with teams at the top of the game for quite some time, so like you say, by default he's the man at the helm now. And he's, I'd imagine, his experiences having been with the Australian squad during their, you know, their real prominent successful years, he would have a lot to bring to the table. So I'd imagine he'd be trying to make that fairly permanent. But he's been put in charge of the South Africa series to start with, so that will be a good battle out there, I think. That will be an interesting one to watch as well, because I see that AB de Villiers has just been injured this morning. He's got a fractured wrist or bone in his hand. So yeah, he's out of contention. And Australia are obviously starting to mix and match their team a little bit with some new faces. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, JP Duminy is there or thereabouts for the South African team. So he's a big part of Pitchfishing Academy now, so we'll all be backing him. But I think Troy Cooley is an interesting case study. I'd love to talk to him at some point. He's an interesting case study because he's had enormous success as a coach with England in 2005, with Australians in 2006-07, and he's also had terrible lows as a coach. You know, we've seen the problems that Mitchell Johnson has had, and Cooley as the bowling coach, you know, hasn't been able to help Mitchell Johnson with those. So, you know, it's an interesting question, and to see what he thinks about how his coaching influences the Australian bowlers and what he feels the role of a coach is, a bowling coach is, you know, in these modern times where cricket is a game which is played in the head, so as much as it is played with the body. So how do, as a coach, how do you get the best out of those players when mental things go wrong as well as technical things? So you know, that would be an interesting conversation, and one that I think coaches can relate to, even if you're just, you know, coaching the local club side under 12s. How do you get the best out of those guys who you see, you know, a couple of times a week for their 2020 games? Okay, so Berners, you've done an interview for us this week with your good friend and occasional playing colleague, Chris Peplow of Ealing Cricket Club.
Yeah, so we caught up with Chris. They've had a massive success lately, winning the Cockspur 2020 Club Championship in the UK, and all the boys are jetting off to Barbados for a rum-soaked couple of weeks. So we caught up with Chris just to get his thoughts, and he spoke to us earlier in the year, actually, and laid out a kind of a field plan of where they want to be. And he hasn't done too bad in terms of what he wanted to achieve. They didn't quite get to the national knockout final in the 45-over game. But in the 2020 game, they pretty much bossed it. And they did boss it. They went to the final at Chelmsford and they won it by 10 wickets in the end. So, comprehensive.
Oh, well, yes, as we discussed last week. So let's have a listen to what Pep has to say about the day.
So joined here with Chris Peplow, former Middlesex County cricketer and now head coach of Ealing Cricket Club in London, whom had some fantastic recent success with the Cockspur T20 club competition in England. So how's it going, Chris?
Yeah, very well, mate. Very happy after a successful season with the mighty E-Men again this year, pulling in our seventh league title. Getting to the semi-finals of the 45-over national knockout competition, but unfortunately losing to Cambridge, but then topping off a great season by winning the national T20 Cockspur competition, which is a fantastic achievement for our bunch of players.
Fantastic. And tell us a bit about what kind of pressure do you think was added to that day? Because obviously it being live on Sky Sports, you've probably played a bit yourself and, you know, felt that kind of pressure when you're on a mantle like that. How do you think the other boys responded? And was there anything that you did yourself or other players in the team to try and kind of dismiss that kind of element to the day?
I think ultimately it was a very exciting day. I mean, for most of our players, they'd been in a massive final last year in the national knockout. And unfortunately, we lost that to South Northumberland. But, you know, we had an experience of a county ground, an experience of a final. So, you know, our boys were aware of what was to be expected. Obviously, there was a new element of the cameras, but, you know, our boys took to it really, really well. And I think, you know, the excitement of the day and, like I say, the experiences of being in the final last year stood us in good stead to perform our skills to the best of our abilities. And, you know, for a young side, I mean, we're only boasting one 35-year-old and one 30-year-old, everybody else sort of 20s, you know, really showed signs of good maturity on the big stage.
Sure. And what, I mean, obviously, you know, it's become apparent that Ealing, you know, that you are very successful in obviously the local league here in the Middlesex Premier League, but also the ability to kind of carry this through into a national level. And, you know, what do you think the defining part of the team is, or the setup that just manages to carry that through? I mean, no doubt there's, you know, there's bags of talent in there, but there must be a little bit more with the amount of games you play, just the consistency to be able to, you know, consistently keep winning and getting into these finals and semi-finals at a national level. What do you think the main thing is around that with the team?
I mean, we have a talented squad of players, you know, a young squad of players that commit throughout the season. You know, we've got good infrastructure. You know, within that squad of sort of 14 players we took to Chelmsford, I think eight former Colts were playing in the finals. I think we had 10 former Colts within the full team. You know, so that just shows the structure of our club. And, you know, the base level of Colts coming through is unbelievable. And we're picking from our own. And that sort of bodes well in terms of, you know, how good mates people are, how people pull together on the pitch. You know, everybody knows each other. They're inside out, knows each other's games, knows what's expected of each other on and off the pitch. And, you know, everybody's relaxed in each other's company. And that just allows the boys to, you know, perform the skills to the best of their ability, you know, knowing that everybody's going to be backing what they do 110%. You know, this season, you know, and I don't know if any other club in the country can boast this, we've just had, you know, two of our young Colts signed. We've had Ned Eckersley, who was a ground staff player trialling for Leicester this year, just been given a 2-year deal with them. And on the back of what Ollie Wilkin has done this season for Ealing and Loughborough, and then what he did on Sky TV in the finals, he's just been offered a 2-year summer contract by Middlesex. So ultimately, I think, you know, the success has come from within, and we're lucky to boast a very strong cult section, which has been running now with sort of academies and so on for the last 10 or so years, and we're just reaping the rewards of that now.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, the guys were in a lovely shop window there, weren't they, on Sky Sports to really demonstrate their skills. And good on Ollie for, because obviously he's a Middlesex boy, so he's managed to turn a few heads there. So that's really good for him and also for the club to show that, you know, the system is working and that people are taking note when these guys perform. So finally, you know, 14 lads over in Barbados, 2 weeks. Where'd you start, Peps?
Oh, it's going to be a very exciting trip. I think there's 4 games of cricket that we'll be partaking in over there, which will be a great amount of fun for those people that haven't played cricket outside of England before. It's just a reward for, you know, a lot of hard work that the boys have put in over the last 6 months of the season. You know, there's been, what, sort of 20 weeks of the season where we've been playing Saturday and Sunday. The boys have turned up for training during the week, so... You know, it's a nice little result for the boys at the end of the year just to go and relax and enjoy and you know, get themselves ready for our 2012 campaign next year, hopefully to defend the T20 Cup and go on and win the league again for the 8th time and hopefully finally win that national knockout.
Absolutely. Well, if you need a scorer, you know where I am. Also quite a specialist rum taster, so you know my number.
Oh, mate, you'll be first. What a call if we need anyone like that. Don't worry about it.
Good man, Chris. Thanks a lot.
Absolute pleasure.
Okay, so we are at that time in the show when you get a chance to win a prize if you have your question read out in our questions section. And the prize, of course, is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And don't forget, JP Duminy is our high profile batting coach that we have just brought online. But there's plenty of other things for you to have a look at if you don't want batting coaching. There's fielding, wicket keeping, there's captaincy, there's tactical stuff. We cover the whole gamut of coaching in quite a lot of detail. So you can get a really satisfying experience from that. But in order to get one of those courses, then you need to send in a question to us. So, Berners, you've been picking out some questions this week. What have we got?
We got a question from Jason here. Jason's question revolves around strength and conditioning. And he says he's been speaking to a guy called Jock Campbell, who is, well, he sounds like he should be tossing the caber in the Highland Games, but he's actually the Australian strength and conditioning coach. Yeah. And... he was saying that most guys can put up to 10 to 15 kilometres on from strength and conditioning. So he was wondering exactly how fast you can get with strength and conditioning and what the 5 best drills are to help increase this.
Yeah, well, there isn't really a simple answer to that. I mean, if you're talking about 5-6 miles an hour, perhaps, you know, 10 kilometres an hour, maybe a little bit more, then... yeah, that's not an I mean, it depends where you start, of course, but it's not an unreasonable sort of average that you can get from strength and conditioning. But it's not a simple matter of going, right, I bowl at 65 miles an hour now. If I go to the gym and do, you know, chest on Monday, back on Tuesday, you know, arms on Wednesday and legs on Friday, then I'm going to put on 5 miles per hour within 3 weeks. It's not quite as, you know, it's not tab A into slot B when it comes to strength and conditioning, because there's a lot of other things going on at the same time. So if you want to put on speed, if your ambition is speed, then you can't go far wrong with doing strength and conditioning, and you know that's going to make a difference. But there's no point in just doing strength and conditioning and waiting for the magic to happen. You have to put in the other work as well, and there's a lot of technical work that goes alongside that. Obviously, the fitter you are, the stronger you are, and the more mobile you are, the better you're able to get into the very unnatural positions that make up bowling and apply more force to the ball. But it's not just that, because you know, you need to be in the right position to let your arm come round as quickly as possible. For example, if you just give a classic example of something that slows a fast bowler down, if you get the timing of your hip drive wrong, then some of the energy leaks out. So all that reaction force from the ground, all that force which is coming up from the ground, gets lost and you lose a lot of speed. So you either have to make up for that with very powerful upper body, or you're going to be bowling slower than your maximum potential. And that doesn't matter how, that doesn't matter how powerful your legs are, you know, or how mobile your hips are. It's all down to a timing thing. But strength and conditioning can help with that, because, you know, the better you can coordinate your body with the correct strength and conditioning drills, you know, plyometric type drills and, you know, Olympic type lifts, whole body type lifts, then the better you can get at coordinating your body anyway. So there's definitely a crossover there. And then, of course, there's the, you know, developing strength in as basic primal movements as possible. So, you know, you want to be developing strength in your legs, in squat movements, in lunge movements, and you want to be developing your upper body in pulling and pushing movements. And then you want a nice stable core, so you stay injury free and you can transfer all that energy from your legs up until your body. So that's the strength and conditioning part of it. The drills for improving speed, well, there's a million of them, and it kind of depends what your technical issue is. But if we're talking in general terms, I would say the best, the absolute single best thing that 90% of bowlers can do to improve their pace is learn how to do the what Ian Pond calls the drop step and front foot block. And I haven't heard a better word for it, so I'm going to call it the drop step and front foot block. It's taken from javelin, where it's called the soft step and front foot block. And a good strong set of legs with a mobile set of hips will help with that, and you can get that from strength and conditioning. And then you learn the technique of the drop step and the front foot block. So you block off, like, you know, like a high jumper would do to a pole vaulter, I should say. A pole vaulter will jam the pole into the ground to get over that massive height of a jump. Well, you're doing the same thing, using the same principle with your leg. Then you're bowling over your front leg and generating as much force as possible. But of course, if you've got a load of fast twitch muscle fibers, which you develop by doing powerful movements in the gym, then that's going to all add to the picture. It's not a simple question to answer, but yes, if you want the simple answer, most people can put on several miles per hour with a well-designed strength and conditioning program in combination with some technical improvements.
Okay, we've got an interesting question come in here from Naveen, who's just asking what sort of age is good for a kid to be introduced to formal coaching, and what you should be looking for in an academy besides qualified coaches to assist this kid in growing up to become a very good cricketer. So often a question, I guess, that parents might well query. So what do you reckon, coach?
You can start pretty young if you want to. You know, you could start at 4 or 5 years old when we're talking about cricket coaching, technical coaching, that I presume that we're talking about here. A 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, you're not going to be able to do a lot more than teach them how to hold a cricket bat. And then the rest is just basically, you know, you chuck a tennis ball in the middle of them and watch them run around. It's not a massively complicated thing for very young kids, and nor should you try and make it that way. You know, you should, if you're in a position where you're coaching kids that young, then there's no point in trying to create technical masters at that age. Really, what it's about is activity and getting children right up until probably the age of 9 or 10 into understanding how their body moves and how they move through space and how to run, how to jump, how to throw, how to bowl, how to strike an object with another object. So, you know, that's batting, but in the simplest term, and how to land. You know, jumping is good, but landing is also an important aspect to learn. And it's really about developing those universal skills. And of course, as cricket fits into a universal skill, there's no reason why you can't do it from a cricketing viewpoint. So you can start pretty young, as long as you don't focus too much on technical drilling. If you want it, the more formal type of coaching, I would say, you know, you can start a little bit older, maybe kind of 10, 11, 12, that kind of age. You can start to formalize it quite a lot more and do more, a lot more of the stuff, which is, you know, what you would think of as traditional cricket drills. That doesn't mean between the age of 4 and 10 that you do no cricket at all. You do a lot of cricket, but you focus really on trying to minimize the amount of dull drilling and maximize the amount of learning those core skills of running, jumping, throwing, hitting, catching, which I didn't mention before. And in terms of an academy, that's quite a broad question. We don't really know what kind of age we're looking for is the problem there. I mean, you look when you're looking for an academy, you're looking for someone who can improve some a player's cricketing skills within a wider context. I think that's really important, no matter what age someone is, whether they're 16 or whether they're 6. What is the context that they're coaching within? If someone is 100% focused on creating a cricketer at the expense of everything else, then that should be a red warning light to you, because cricketers, you can't become a cricketer completely in isolation from the rest of the world. You become over specialised, your chances of injury are much higher, and there's a fair chance that you're going to get fed up with the game because you don't have a wide range of physical and social experiences because everything is focused so much on cricket. So obviously with younger kids, the focus is going to be much less on cricket and more on general skills. With older kids, it's going to be much more on cricket. But you always need to have a context.
It's just like your diet, really, isn't it? It has to be varied. You don't always be eating burgers. You don't always be playing cricket. That's the way it goes. When I was the lad, you played cricket in the summer, you played rugby and football in the winter, and you made loads and loads of friends. And then you realised, I'm a little bit better at this, or I want to do that. And then you can make the most out of it because you want to do it. And if the kid wants to do it, it's going to be far more successful than mum and dad plonking him into an academy with really high fees where some guy's drilling him every day and he's got no interest.
Yeah, exactly. You know, top players, you look at top cricketers, they're all excellent sportsmen. You know, they're not just excellent cricketers. You know, they could probably certainly have played a very decent standard of at least one or two other sports. And the reason for that is they've got that physical awareness, that what we call physical literacy. So, yeah, I think the watchword for any academy is, do they keep it in context? If they keep it in context, then you're always going to be onto a winner. By the way, a little aside, when we're talking about academies, anyone who's listening in the UK wants to attend an academy, I highly recommend Gary Palmer's academy. If you go to pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer at the moment, he's taking enrolments. Well, he's taking trial days for his coaching academy in starting in December. So if you're interested in getting coaching from Gary Palmer in a live environment, then head over to pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer if you're in the UK, and you can find out more about how you do a trial for that. Okay, so that's your lot for this week, and just before we go, we're going to pick a winner for the competition this week. So, Berners, whose question did you feel was the best this week?
I thought we had two good questions this week, but I think we'll go with Jason. I like the technical nature of his question, and getting stronger and fitter is always good. So hopefully we gave him some good advice, and he can pick up maybe Ian Ponce's fast bowling course.
Yeah, plenty of drills in that. So congratulations, Jason. And if you want to send in your question to us, you can do so on the usual offices. And Berners, what's the details you've got there for that?
Can drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com or give us a quick call at 020-88-167-691, and all of the international numbers are on the website, so feel free to drop us a line.
Yes, indeed. And of course, you can get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach and Facebook, Pitch Vision Academy. Do a search. iTunes is the place to get us if you want to get us every week. And if you go on to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can find us there, subscribe for free. It's the cost of a click is all it is. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you listen on your phone or whatever, you can get the feed direct from us on the website at pitchvision.com in the show notes every week. So that is it for this week. Don't forget to keep sending in your questions, because we couldn't do this without you. And thanks very much for listening. And until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.